Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Hit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Y'all know who it is. It's Black Trey. And I wanted to make a programming note. Growing Up the Same will be taking a break until 2022. In the meantime, check out our old episodes and other pods on the Count the Dings Network.
If you love me, please don't judge me. Got my hands tied, the power's above me. Don't shoot the messenger, I'm just a puppet here. If you wanna place blame, then look to the puppeteer. Family, fortune, envy, jealousy, privilege, passed on, legacy, secret, sabotage, borderline, felony, suicide, subtract, selfish, pedigree.
Welcome to Machiavellian Fucks, the succession podcast discussing the murders and acquisitions of the Roy family. I'm Jason Madison, alongside Nando Vila. We are going to give you a perspicacious view of the sociopathy that is cultivated at the highest level of the capitalist hierarchy. Around here, we stand Jerry Kelman, we're Shiv Roy apologists, and have more skulls than Tom Wamsgams can shake a slur at. Shout out to the L to the OG. And if you can't take the park coat, then fuck off.
Oh, very nice. Very excited to talk succession. One of the last, or one of the only, maybe the only, like, water cooler show around right now. Like, the one that everyone has to watch so you can be in the know.
HBO has done it again.
They have done it again.
This seems to be their calling card. And Adam McKay, you know, he's in his bag a la Big Short, and, you know, his financial side of his game, along with Jesse Armstrong, who's written an amazing show. Show runs an amazing show. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get into
it. You know, the Adam McKay, you know, his hatred of the American ruling class is pure, and it seethes through all of Succession. It's one of the reasons why we love it, folks.
Yeah. And it seems like he has a very keen understanding of what makes them tick. You know, and all the different personalities that are involved in the class, you know, and I think that is what makes it so interesting, because, you know, you think about rich people kind of almost, well, a lot of people I would say as a monolith, right? Mm. You think of them in terms of either the politicians or, you know, the tech people that we hear about, but we don't necessarily discuss the Connor Roys or the Roman Roys of the world, or even the Shivs for that matter, right? Most of the rich women are relegated to either your Oprahs or, you know, whoever, you know, you would think of, but nobody like that.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, there's also this whole other class of people within the show, which are like a very real phenomenon amongst the very rich, which are what I would call like corporate operators who don't really do anything. You know, it's like, you know, the 80-20 rule in life, you know, like that kind of, where like 80% of the stuff is made by 20% of the people. And that kind of that proportion is remarkably consistent across a bunch of things, like the Frank character and the Carl character, and even to some extent the Jerry character. They're just kind of there. They're just kind of smart at being in the game, but they don't really do anything. Their whole thing is about their number one skill is being able to cover their ass when something goes wrong, and to deflect the blame to others when something goes wrong. And that's what allows them to ascend to the upper echelons of the corporate ladder, and achieve like insane amounts of wealth. But they don't really, no one knows what they do. Like, what do they do in the company?
Well, I think to a certain extent, it's kind of just being a skilled linguist and a good gamesman, like, to know what game you're in and how you can wiggle and finagle your way around. Yeah. Right. I don't want to put Jerry in the same class as Frank and Carl. She seems to have a little bit more utility than they do. She does a lot of, you know, obviously Logan's bidding. She's Roman's babysitter, you know, so she does serve a seemingly useful purpose greater than a lot of the other henchmen in the show.
But there's even, you just mentioned that, like, there's the part of their number one skill is like this, their use of words and slippery language. And like, there's that great scene in the first season, in the first episode of season three, where she calls like Trump's, like, essentially like either chief of staff or Kellyanne Conway type figure. And they have that conversation over the phone where she's like trying to suggest some course of action without saying it outright, you know, like she can't say like, listen, dude, just get the fucking president to fire the AG and put in someone who's going to fucking, she can't say that. She has to dance around it by using euphemisms and the like, and she knows how to do it.
Yeah. And that was actually my favorite part of the episode, because exactly what you just mentioned. And even to that point, when Logan is behind her and he does the finger across the throat to end the conversation, where we kind of all know that the conversation should end right there. She's lost her battle of the wits with whoever she's on the other side of the phone with. When she tries to get them, she says something to the effect like, let's have the old guys get on the blower. And she gets shot
which
down.
Is like, is that an expression that anyone has ever used? Like Maze is
back
nodding
in
his
the
head.
Day. Yeah, it's what the old guys do. They get on the blower.
They get on the blower. Like it's something the millennials, because we don't have like phones and we don't talk on the phone. That's like maybe an expression, you know, that just doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, get the two old guys on the blower and have them blow it out or whatever. I don't get it.
She was completely shot down. But I also love, the other layer of people. I guess the hierarchy would go, you know, obviously Logan at the top, and then, you know, you have the kids and everybody who's on their layer, but then you have everybody who's right under them, the Toms, the Gregs. And then, so that layer and the one right under them, which would be the people who the guy who Tom put his feet on, you know, like all of the people right under them, it's such a big chasm between that like third and fourth tier. And it's really interesting to see how that structure of life works.
Well, we look at we talk about the 1% versus the 99% a lot. And that's true. There is a 1% and we are not a part of it. And then there's the 99%. But then within the 1%, it's the same exact proportion. The distance between the 99% and the 1% in the overall population is the exact same distance within the 1% of the 1% and the 99% of the 1%, if that makes sense. And then within that 1%, it's the same exact proportion. That the wealth, as it goes up exponentially. So the distance between the people at the top is distributed along the same proportionality as the overall population. So you start to see, like, once you get up there, you're like, holy shit, there's like this whole other class of people that are like the same distance that you or I would have to a multimillionaire or whatever. They capture that as well, really well.
Yeah, the tiers of sycophantic behavior, it kind of functions like a human centipede, whereas whoever's in front of you, you're eating their shit, and then you are shitting on whoever is below you, which is why Tom is so fascinating, because he eats more shit than anyone, you know, bore on the floor, in court at the Senate hearing. But then as soon as he feels like he has power over someone, he's putting his feet up on them. He's inventing footstooling, or he's yelling at Hugo on the plane in the first episode, like, fuck off, Hugo, because Hugo's below him. So he can actually say what he wants.
And the funny thing about that is those guys kind of know that they will always toil in the middle. Right. Oh, Tom is aware of his position to an extent that kind of makes him more of an asshole to other people below him, because he's like, well, I'm never going to be Kendall or, you know, anybody above me. So I got to make you eat shit. And then you look at, or at least to me, I think the people with the best chances to advance from power are Greg and Marcia, who seemingly came from nothing. Right. I mean, Greg is somewhat born into wealth, but not totally. Right. And then Marcia came from her village or wherever, and she's been able to usurp everybody. And, you know, it's just interesting to see there are instances where there are people who come completely outside of the wealth circle and are able to, you know, insulate themselves within it.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the paradoxes that a lot of the self-made billionaires or rich people face, is that they build this great empire. They, you know, achieve insane amounts of wealth. They spawn a bunch of children who are then given amounts of wealth that are unimaginable to any normal human being, which makes them soft, which makes them strange.
Curdled fucking cream.
Yeah, exactly. And then the self-made guy who came from nothing ends up hating his own children, which is what, you know, this is what this, this is a dynamic that this show captures perfectly, is that Logan Roy fucking despises each and every one of his kids. You know, he might tolerate them every once in a while. He might have a sweet moment with them every once in a while, but deep down inside, he fucking resents them. He despises them because they will never understand what it means to have suffered in any meaningful way. I think that when he's like constantly, but they all want to like leave a legacy, right? So they want to give the company off to their kids, but they fucking hate their kids. So that's the dilemma inside of Logan Roy, which makes him so interesting. And I think that he understands on some level that Kendall is just like a millennial shithead who like is polished in all the right jargon and says like all kinds of, you know, talks like a non-human because he just talks in this kind of like insane corporate speak, which he substitutes for his lack of drive or will to power or insane desire to dominate that Logan Roy has. Shiv is kind of like Kendall, just way too cares way too much about what polite society thinks about her. And then ironically, the other one, the younger one, Roman, is as sociopathic as Logan Roy, like is a full-on sociopath, does not give a shit what anyone thinks about him. But because he grew up so insanely wealthy, he's essentially got like arrested development and he's like a, just this child, like a literal child. Like he cannot grow up and he can't have sex. And he's like this weird, like, you know, he's just like stunted in some way. And it's because he grew up so wealthy.
And he probably has the lowest IQ of the, maybe the four of them, right? I mean, yeah. Connor is obviously some sort of history buff. You know, he does have some blind spots in his self-awareness, but, you know, Roman, he, in a lot of ways, you see he does not understand the mechanisms of the corporate structure and how things work. He's able to, you know, obviously parse his way through by being his dad's lapdog. But other than that, like, he doesn't have his own ideas. He doesn't know what to do at any turn, you know. And I think Kendall's, you know, great folly, or one of them, you know, he has plenty, is that he doesn't know what he wants, you know, other than to be his dad. He doesn't really have anything that he's particularly interested in or anything that he likes. He wants to be thought of as cool, you know? And Shiv, you know, I like Shiv. I mean, she has the same attributes as her dad, where she's just a terrible person, you know? Yeah. Like at her core, she's just ruthless. She doesn't really care about other people like that, you know, but she's smart as fuck and she can, you know, manipulate any situation with the best of them.
Yeah. One of the other dynamics that I find super interesting in the show and that captures very accurately is that men like Logan Roy, these kind of old school patriarchs, you know, you don't see that type of person that much anymore because of a certain level of bourgeois college indoctrination that the ruling class has now. But, you know, he comes from a different era. He comes from the working class. And men like that become like these kind of patriarchal figures and frankly, bullies, like aggressive, domineering bullies. The one thing that they desperately want, they want it on some deep level, even though they don't like necessarily know they want it, is for someone to stand up to them. You know, and so like when they surround themselves by these yes men, which they always do because they're bullies, you know, but they end up fucking hating the yes men, including their children, which is why he like, as soon as Roman kind of like begs for the job and then he's like, oh no, but Jerry might do it or whatever. Oh, whatever you want, that, like, as soon as he's like, you know, he's out. And but the interesting thing to me was, you know, at the end of season two, when Kendall betrays Logan in this kind of very shocking way, Logan actually kind of smiles.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, like he's like proud of him on some level.
He respected it.
He respected it.
He's like, move.
It's a decent move. But then as soon, like the beginning of this episode, as soon as he calls him, and Kendall like just freaks out. He's like, I can't take that right now. Had Kendall gotten on the phone and be like, what? You know, I did it. What the fuck? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Logan would have respected it and would have been like, okay, let's work out a deal. It'll be great. Like, you're back in. Like, he doesn't understand that like what those people desperately want is to just be fucking someone to stand up to them.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that is that, you know, if it wasn't his dad, he might be able to see clearer. But the fact that they have this familial relationship is clouding, you know, his judgment on all fronts. And the other thing too is that I think Logan actually really likes Shiv, but back to your patriarchal perspective, she's a woman. So yeah, he can't let go of that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so funny because the series starts off with him trying to, you know, wrest control of his own fortune and give it to Marsha for no other reason than that he just likes her. Yeah. You know? But for some reason, you know, because he's an older man coming from that time period, he can't see Shiv in the role, even though, you know, all accounts point to her being his successor.
But he knows that Shiv is the smartest one, but Shiv also doesn't have the insane kind of like, okay, for example, in this episode, everyone's like wondering what to do, whether they should cooperate with the feds and basically apologize and be like, we're gonna be better, whatever. And Shiv, because she cares about like what her bourgeois norms tell her to, is like, no, we have to cooperate with the feds. Are you crazy? Like, we have to cooperate with the feds and we should like, you know, like do a soft PR thing where we're like kind of come in, you know, like apologize for this, you know, whatever, get a woman in there to like, you know, whatever. And Logan's instinct is always like, let's get the fucking shark lawyer. Let's not get that woman lawyer. Like, he gets talked into it, but he wants the fucking shark. He wants to just go full aggro. And the thing is, he's probably right that that's the best way to go forward. I mean, Trump taught us that, right? Like, never apologize, like never back down. No matter what you get caught in, just like bluster through it. You'll be better off in the long run. If you, as soon as you apologize, it's an admission of guilt and they will, the apology will never satisfy the people who are, you know, demanding it. And, but she can't do that. She can't see that, you know, she's like, oh, like, of course we're going to cooperate with the feds. And Logan's like, no, we're going scorched earth. Like this is because this, but that is what you need to succeed under capitalism, is this insane desire for competition. And if you don't, someone will do it, you know, someone will replace you, some other, either at your own company or at some other company. Someone who's willing to do the dirty business of it is going to do it and they're going to win.
Yeah. And also Logan realizes that, listen, I represent this side of the brain, this side of the coin, a Republican, whatever you want to, you know, categorize it as. And like you said, as soon as I start apologizing for things, then maybe I'm starting to lean towards the other side a little bit. And that's when my empire can fall. If I have all my troops, all 70 million Trump voters or whoever on my side, it doesn't matter what they throw at me, I will not fall. And he's aware of that. And, you know, we look back at Shiv's past and she was with Gil and, you know, she's kind of bringing in the wind about which side she wants, what she believes in. And Logan can't stand for that.
Yeah, no, you can't stand for that. You got to go full court press all the time, every single second of the fucking game. You give an inch and they'll take a fucking mile. That's the reality. I mean, it's like, it's not nice and it's not pretty, but that's why this show works so much. Like, you know, they don't soften the satire. They don't like, you know, the typically in an American studio would, you know, you got to find a sympathetic character that you need to root for. The audience needs to like get behind or whatever. And this show, like, I think one of the reasons why it's become such a phenomenon is that they don't pull any of that shit. They just, it's just relentless in its nasty portrayal of our rotten and disgusting ruling class. I mean, that's just the reality. People know that. People know that why do you think there's all these fucking conspiracies around, like, you know, Pizzagate and, you know, Q and all that shit? Like, why do you think those things have such popular purchase? Is because people understand in their bones that we're being run by sickos, you know, that are like sickos fucking run everything. And there's no good people in that. Once you get to a certain stratosphere, they're never good. You know, like, pick whichever billionaire you can think of that is known as like the good billionaire or whatever. Those guys are fucking sickos. They have to be.
Yeah. To acquire that kind of wealth, you have to have done some kind of heinous activity to, but a counterpoint to what you just said, what about Cousin Greg? Obviously we know that he's done some foul shit. But I think in the eyes of the average viewer and most people watching the show, that's the person they root for, right?
Yeah, he's the closest to the audience avatar by far.
Yeah. His
journey starts at the beginning of the show and he enters the world just like we did, right? So he's coming in at the same level of knowledge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's true. But Cousin Greg's like a slimy little fuck too, you know? Like, 100%. I mean, he's a slimy fuck.
And a Machiavellian fuck.
Yeah, he's a Machiavellian fuck. He's very young and he doesn't have much power within it, but he's quickly identified a way to get power, which is essentially by blackmail, you know, and he identified that right away. So he has the gene in him if he wants to be. Like, I suspect by the end of the show, like season whatever, six, like Cousin Greg will be at the upper echelons of Waystar Royko as some sort of like power player because he's a slimy fuck.
The flash forward that I envision as an ending is Cousin Greg. He's the new Logan. He's old. He's succeeded, you know? Like, the least likely, you know, the orphan in the basket that floats down the river and ends up leading the revolution. Like, that would be a funny way to do it.
No, for sure. And I think he's actually learning a lot from everybody. You know, like, you can see him visually soaking things up as the series progresses, whether it's from Tom and everything that goes on at that level. And, you know, obviously they put him in the midst of the Cruiser scandal. And then now with him on Kendall's side, I mean, Kendall has kind of been nurturing him since, you know, they came together, you know, like Kendall kind of sees a friend in Greg and Greg just sees opportunity. It seems like, you know, it's like, you're my cousin, but like, okay, you know, my mom's poor. I'm trying to figure out a way to hustle up and get us out of this shit. Yeah.
Man, I was so happy, you know, it's been 2 years since the last episode of Succession, right? Which is just abnormally long for this kind of thing. So I think like the pressure cooker was building and like there was a lot of pressure on the Succession team to deliver, you know, a fucking killer episode, which in my opinion, they absolutely did. Like that was Succession firing on all cylinders, that episode. But nothing more than the scene between Kendall and Cousin Greg. When, as you mentioned, when Kendall's like, listen, Greg, I need you to take my socio-political temperature, man. I need you to like stick a thermometer up the ass of the nation and tell me like, is this going to, you know, like hurt my rep in any way? And Greg's like, yeah, I could do that. How exactly? You know, like Kendall has no idea. He's just talking fucking nonsense too, you know? And then like when he's just like, any conclusions, Greg, from your media watch? And he's like, yeah, you know,
monitoring.
Yeah. He's like, the internet's a big place. And some of the tweets are good, but some of them were bad. And I didn't read all of them because there's a lot of internet. It's like,
Exactly. And the funny thing about it is like, even in that capsule, like you look at then what Kendall did and him bringing in those ladies to basically do what Greg was doing. And essentially he's going to pay them some king's ransom to just do what Greg was doing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, they're not going to do a lot better or than, you know, it's Twitter, but he's placed such like this artificial worth on, you know, this being a part of his brand and all that, because again, his character is so vapid in real life that he knows he has to fill it up with something that means something to somebody.
He's going to get the BoJack writers to write his tweets.
Yeah, the BoJack guys.
I'm going to get some guys from the Lampoon. That was like, I mean, you guys have worked in businesses or whatever, like, there's nothing more bullshit than like a social media consultant, right? Like, you know, like that is just like a not like one of the ironies of American capitalism is that there's so much ass covering needed to survive within it that a huge percentage of any operating budget goes to these like consultants who don't do anything, like really don't do anything other than help you cover your ass. You know, like when the inevitable shit hits the fan, you're like, well, I hired the best people. They're the best. And they told us to do this. And then like, they don't have to suffer any consequences because they just move on to the next company. But like a huge amount of this money is like sloshing around this consultant class, which are like, yeah, digital brand experts and, you know, whatever the fuck. And
cool tweets.
Like, yeah. Tweets.
Where they say, we want to discuss our 5 points or something.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
The world is racing to get back to normal and start meeting up in person again. But after the year we've all had, getting back to feeling normal takes time. I don't know about you guys. I've been feeling overwhelmed, flustered, just avalanche, stuck under this avalanche of things I have to do and people I have to see and people I got to talk to, Zoom meetings and emails. Hell, even this ad that I'm recording right now, I forgot that I had to do it. I'm doing it from a computer that's not even mine. It's really tough to do all of this when you feel like you're trying to handle it all by yourself. Do you feel like that? If you're feeling overwhelmed by it all, guess what? You're not alone. It's important to find the support you need to face those feelings and move forward. We all talk to our friends when we're experiencing issues, but they don't always give us the advice we need. I mean, think about it. They can't really give us unbiased feedback because they're involved in many of our interactions and how we are. What you really need is advice from a licensed professional. It can be refreshing and rewarding. When you're in a low point, you might feel alone. But over 50% of Americans struggle with their mental health. We all need help sometimes, and asking for support when you need it is actually a sign of strength. Here's the idea. Use Talkspace. It's great. It's easy to use. It matches you with a licensed therapist and schedule live video sessions, all from the comfort of your device. You can start messaging your therapist the same day you sign up. The app makes it easy to connect with the therapist that is licensed and on your schedule without having to wait weeks before your next appointment. You can go anywhere and take your therapist with you. Whether you're a parent, student, millennial, or just someone having a hard day, Talkspace can provide the support to help you feel better with a single message. Talkspace offers individual and couples therapy in addition to medication prescription services. Set goals with your therapist, and they can help make sure you're really progressing. Talkspace therapists help you develop the tools to cope in difficult times. It works around your schedule at your convenience. Send and receive unlimited messages with your dedicated therapist in the app. Schedule live video sessions with your licensed therapist from anywhere. Whether you're experiencing depression, anxiety, or other problems, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you sort through any issue. Got thousands of licensed therapists available for you to match with, and they're experts in dozens of specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationships, and more to help you start feeling better. Start feeling better with a single message. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code BOM. That's $100 off when you use the code BOM at Talkspace.com.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here from Cinephobe. Yeah, that podcast. It's a good one. Ascertain. Telling you right now, Prize Picks, that's the way to go. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million members. The easiest and most exciting way to play DFS is just you against the numbers. You pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. It's demon time. That's right. You're asking, what does that mean? It's demon time. I'll tell you. Demons and Goblins, the newest and most exciting way to play at Prize Picks. Squares marked with red demons or green goblins get you different payouts. You can now win up to 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. That's insane. That's insane of Prize Picks to do. You know what else is insane? They offer injury insurance so that your entries stay in play, even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, that player projection won't count against you, and the rest of your entry stays alive. Prize Picks is the only DFS platform with an injury insurance policy. And by the way, they now offer Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account. This football, basketball, any season you're playing. Me personally, I'm taking more than points on Joel Embiid all the time. I'm taking more than assists on Tyrese Halliburton. I'm taking less than points on Jordan Poole. Those seem to be the easy money makers for you. And you're probably wondering, Zach, how do I get involved in this? You go to prizepicks.com/ding and use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/ding. Use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Hello, listener. Have you ever used ButcherBox? I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to be a butcher. I used to work at an unnamed grocery store. I used to be that tall man behind the counter in your neighborhood, cutting up meat and preparing seafood for you. And I know that it can be a stressful situation. I know that it can be crowded. You have to wait your turn. You have to know what you want. You feel rushed. Sometimes you might think that your butcher has a bad attitude. I don't know. Happened to a friend. Couldn't possibly be me. But that's why I love ButcherBox. ButcherBox brings you peace of mind. You can easily find high quality beef, chicken, pork that you can trust is humanely raised. There's no antibiotics or added hormones. There's the ultimate convenience of not having to deal with butchers or the crowded meat counter after a long day at work. It's delivered right to your doorstep. There's always free shipping and there's incredible value. You're getting really high quality products at an amazing value. You get exclusive member deals. You get recipe inspiration, guides, hacks. A little hack from my butcher experience, the petite top sirloin, which is about half the price of the New York steak, is a very similar cut with a fat cap on one side, and you get very good tenderness out of the petite sirloin. If you've ever been to a Brazilian steakhouse and you see them talking about picanha, that's the petite sirloin. With ButcherBox, I'm always prepared. I always have meat on deck for a grill and chill, a cookout, or just making dinner at home. And I'm saving a ton of money from shopping at the grocery store all the time. Now, I know what you're thinking. That's great, but what's my reward for signing up for ButcherBox? Well, I'm glad you asked, because if you sign up at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, you will get free ground beef for life. For life. Enough ground beef to fill the Nile, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/dings.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's get to the meat and potatoes of the episode, and you know what I really loved about this, the new character, Lisa Arthur, played by Sanaa Lathan. Thank God Succession brought a black character on the show.
Season 3, finally.
And they made her intelligent and sought after, which I'm sure the writers knew that they had to do that. But it was a great casting choice, and I think it was perfectly positioned. Sanaa, I think, played the role great. She had one of the great, best moments in the episode when she called Kendall a puppet. I thought that was dope. And also when you know, her and Shiv went tete-a-tete, Shiv overplaying her hand, as she often does, and not realizing that Kendall had one up on her, as he sometimes does. So, you know, I like Sanaa's role in this episode. I'll be interested to see, you know, how they, you know, flesh it out throughout the season. But I think she's a dope addition to the cast.
Let me ask you guys real quick. So when Shiv says that they're friends, quote unquote, you know, they're really, they're not friends. So like, did she meet her? Did they meet each other at like a Gil charity dinner? Like where did they first cross paths, Nando?
Well, there's some speculation that they had more than friends.
Whoa, wow.
Situation.
That's a good meme image right there.
Yeah. I mean, the most likely place that they met is in like Yale or whatever the fuck, right. You know, that they were like college friends in some elite, you know, Ivy League place. Or like, I mean, I mean, you know, Shiv is a society person in New York, as any kind of successful, powerful, rich woman is involved in. Like, I mean, it could be the foundation to support Friends of the Met or whatever, or the Lincoln Center, blah blah blah, all this shit, like this, like ruling class social lubrication, which is the philanthropic industrial complex around, especially around high culture. At the New York City Ballet, they're both like, they have the box next to each other at the fucking New York City Ballet or whatever. These are all options where they would have been friends, but they're not really friends because none of these people can be friends.
No.
Right?
It's like, they can't be real friends.
Everybody's exactly. On the payroll.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're all out for each other on some level, and they're all for sale. Like, they would never like stand up for a friend if it cost them like a single cent. I mean, I think that the introduction of like a powerful, successful female black attorney into the show, like a lesser show would have made her, you know, like have some sort of wisdom that like the others don't. But like, no, they realize that if she was to get there to that position of power, she has to be just as ruthless as the other ones, if not more ruthless. Right. Mm. Like, I mean, then Shiv kind of mentions this, like, no, she loves money and she loves to fucking win, you know, like, she's a shark too, you know, like she's just like anyone else in this world. Like, they didn't make her like the, you know, she brings a different perspective or something. It's like, that's the way it works, is like, it absorbs minorities by, it either absorbs the ones that are most like them, you know, or it turns them into them, you know, like that's how the system works. It doesn't like allow for a different perspective.
Yeah. There's no diversity hires in these groups. It doesn't operate like that on any level, but she's just as sharp tongued as the rest of them. And if not more so, you know, we might see that in weeks to come, as much as they, you know, were advocating for her, they were all, you know, singing her praises. And I also found it slightly interesting that they didn't mention she was black. You know, yeah. I would have thought that Logan or one of them would have mentioned, you know, her race in some sort of way. And the fact that they pulled back from that, I thought was actually pretty interesting.
Yeah. I'm curious to meet who this shark lawyer that he always wanted from the beginning, this Leo guy, what he is, you know, some sort of like Alan Dershowitz type or something, you know, just some fucking scorched earth, you know, or like, what's that guy who was going to run for president? Michael Avenatti, you know?
So where are we, if we're placing futures bets, I don't know if you're a sports bettor, but we're placing futures bets on who, let's say, wins the season out of the kids, who do we like?
I mean, certainly not Kendall. I mean, it's very obvious that Kendall is going to get close and it's going to blow up in his face. Like, it has to. I don't think any of the kids are going to win. I mean, I think they're not going to give the victory to one of the kids. It's going to be something orthogonal to that. But I think if I had to choose, I mean, what's going to happen is, I think Shiv is going to ally with Kendall, and Roman is going to go hard with Logan, which is kind of a mirroring the real life Murdoch family, in which, like, what's his name? Lachlan is one of them is way more into like the right wing propaganda shit. Lachlan is the one who's like way more closer to Rupert and like aligned in his political vision and loves Fox News and like all that shit. And then there's the other one, James, I think, who's like a Kendall. He's like the liberal, more polished, you know, invited to all the cool parties and stuff. And so I think Roman, who doesn't give a shit about any of that, is going to ally himself with Logan, whereas the two kind of, you know, millennial snowflakes, Shiv and Kendall, are gonna join forces.
Yeah, it looks right now like Roman is kind of in the catbird seat, right? He's got Jerry on his side. Logan is obviously in his favor. And even though Kendall has Lisa Arthur, as she plainly put it at the end of the show, he wants to take down his dad without implicating him while still having rest and control and interest in the company, which is seemingly an impossibility. So it seems like there's no roadmap for him to accomplish what he wants to. And then him and Shiv, they can't really play nice. So it seems like they would rather, you know, feed each other poison than win the game. So yeah. My bet is on Roman coming out by the end of the season.
What's your bet on whether Shiv and Tom even like get back to like even get together again? Because they're gonna be, they're clearly on separate sides. They're gonna be on separate sides, right? Like Tom is gonna be next to Logan in Sarajevo or whatever the fuck. And Shiv, and he's like, yeah, the way they said goodbye, I was like, yeah, we'll talk about our stuff like later. And she's like, yeah, yeah, totally. And
then like that just seems to be like six or seven episodes.
Yeah, that conversation won't happen till the end, if at all.
Tom went pretty quickly back to lapdog status as soon as he heard that she was up for it. So, I mean, it definitely does seem like Shiv is going to go to Kendall. I don't know if it's like immediately right now, like that's where her car is headed, or if it'll happen a bit later. But if she's with Kendall, that puts Tom in a really weird position.
Yeah.
Having to suck up to Logan, but then also, you know, his wife. I don't think they'll settle their relationship stuff at all. I think that has been firmly backseated. She
fucking put him up to go to fucking prison to take the fall for the thing. Yeah. You know?
So he, now he can't be extradited. So it's all good. Yeah. It's all good, Nando.
It's all good.
Yeah, no, she's dealt him some, you know, some heavy blows, man. And
Open marriage on the day of the wedding, right? Like, dropping that on you.
Yeah, I mean, in addition to I was cheating on you right before we got married.
Yeah. With the Bernie bro,
which
is just like it makes it even worse.
So you know, I don't know, but I can't. You know, Tom, he's not going to leave. You know, this is everything he's ever wanted. So for him, I don't really see his out. It's not like he's going to grow a soul or a heart over the course of the next few episodes. So I think Tom is going to be fine suffering in silence.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that's so insightful also is that at that level of wealth that they can't enjoy it, right? Like they can't enjoy any of the fruits of their wealth. Like they have all this comfort, but they can't really take pleasure from any of the insanely, you know, like the nice bottles of wine or whatever that they can afford now, the insane food that they can have whenever they want, the hotel rooms. They can never stop to enjoy it because they're always worried about someone else, you know, they're always jockeying for position. They can never have time to stop and smell the roses. And that's a very true thing. That, you know, the saying that money doesn't buy you happiness is bullshit propaganda, but it is true that up to a certain point, you know, Biggie was right. Like after a certain amount, like more money, more problems, but obviously it sucks to be poor, but then, you know, you get up to a certain level of material wealth that you does allow you to enjoy life a little bit, but then once you get past that, you start to just like, you know, you taste the fruits of it and it just tastes like sand.
I think food actually was like a very interesting topic of this episode, right, where Logan is talking about saliva. Like Carl wants a sandwich and he's like, fuck that, we're not eating. If I get the shits, we're fucked. And obviously the wine bottle with Rava and Naomi. And, you know, I was actually really interested to see Rava's character and how, you know, she dealt with Kendall in this episode. I thought that was really interesting how they had her kind of just like pacifying him in a way and letting him do his thing. And then he still could not help himself but to say some fucked up shit. And bring Naomi over.
Bring his fucking girlfriend over to the ex-wife's house. I mean, the funniest thing. The funniest thing is like, you know, he's so desperate for approval. You know, which is it's his flaw, right? You know, like it's why he'll never be CEO. It's because he's so desperate for approval, he can never be it, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, the first thing is like, hey, did you see me out there? Like, what'd you think? You know, like, and she's like, I was busy. I didn't watch it. You know, it's like the most devastating thing she could have ever said to him. Yeah. And then because he's a spoiled brat, right? Like, as it is inevitable to grow up, you know, the scion of a billionaire. There's no way that you just had all the toys you could ever want whenever you wanted them. So like, he has no, he probably doesn't even realize that it's weird to invite his fucking, you know, smoke show girlfriend to the ex-wife with in the house with her kid, with their kids, you know, like.
But to him, right? He's probably like, I bought this house. I pay for this house.
Yeah.
Like, me.
He doesn't even think about it. You know, it's just like, I get whatever I want, whenever I want it, you know, like.
He thinks that him asking was actually like the very nice thing. Right?
That was a lot. Yeah.
That was a lot. Like he was being like more than gracious by asking her. Yeah. Like, which is, that's the world that he lives in. No, it's really interesting. So yeah, I'm excited to see how Rava and his relationship plays out over this season, because it's never been good, and it was good for about 5 seconds when he showed up to the door, and that was it.
I gotta admit, I had to look up. I was like, "Who's this woman again?" You know,
she wasn't in season two.
I know. I was like, "Who's?" I like, looked it up very quickly. I was like, "Rava Roy." I was like, "Is it?" I thought for a second it was like cousin Greg's mom, maybe, but I like didn't remember at all.
Yeah, well, remember the incident with Logan and his son, and the memory game that they were playing.
Yeah, no, now I remember. Yeah, but like at the time when I was watching it, I was like, not exactly sure.
Yeah. What do we think's coming up next episode?
Man, I can't wait. I can't fucking wait. We're going to see like what Logan's counterattack is, right? Because this was like, you know, Kendall punched first and Logan took a serious shot. And, but Kendall immediately folded or immediately gave up his advantage by not insisting upon, and now comes the Logan counterpunch, and that should be interesting to see what it is.
Yeah, no, I read an article that said Kendall Roy is the worst chess player of all time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like at the moments when he should press, he falls back, and the moments when he should fall back, he presses. Yeah. And it's just every measure is counterintuitive, and he's just a lost little boy, you know? But yeah, I'm interested to see where Shiv was driving her car, you know? That's going to be an interesting.
I think she's certainly the one who leaked it.
Yeah.
That Jerry is CEO. Cause it was the only people that knew that were anybody who was with Logan and Shiv. So
yeah,
right.
That seems to be her move.
Will she go back to the Bernie Sanders guy?
You'll even.
Is he going to win the presidency? Whatever. Is that storyline just dead? Or
because that he's the guy leading the investigation or whatever, right?
I think the election will factor in. I don't know if it'll be this season or maybe like next season, but they tease that again. You know, it's not Trump, but it is a Trump-like raisin.
Yeah.
So that will play in. But I think she's going to Kendall to talk to him, but not to like
join him
quite yet.
Nice.
For the show, we should do like a best lines like segment, like where we pull the best line episode.
There was a lot of good ones. I mean, suck my dick, he said, as we suffer from the sexual assault allegations. That one's in there. I want you to stick a temperature thermometer up the nation's ass. Take my sociopolitical temperature is fucking great. Like maybe some quick hit TEDx talk.
Well, what about Carl? If your hands are clean, that means there's a manicurist at your whorehouse.
Carl loves his whores, man.
He loves the whores, dude. He loves the crows.
Yeah. He also loves sandwiches.
Yeah.
Hey, they often go hand in hand.
My favorite exchange was the OJ.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Juicy loose, baby.
Yeah. Who says I haven't killed anyone?
Right. Which was like,
I was like, whoa.
That's a record scratch moment. That brings everything to a halt. You're just like, oh wow.
If there's any better representation of somebody being a sociopath, it's Kendall wallowing in his own grief for a whole season, like unable to move, and then he snaps out of it and says, fuck it, I'm going to make a joke about the guy that I killed. Like, what? Insane. But we love him.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the pod. Check us out next week. Peace.